Welcome to RCGP Scotland Presents Generally Speaking. In this, the fifth episode of the podcast, RCGP Scotland Chair Dr. Chris Provan talks to Dr. Baba Ratgar about improving experiences for international medical graduates.
So, Baba, really welcome to Generally Speaking. It's fantastic to talk to you again. We've had a few conversations over time about your experience, about international medical graduates. I met you, we were saying about 18 months, 2 years ago, when I was first beginning to explore IMG issues, and your experience has stuck with me and helped me think about how we help each other going forward. So, Baba, you know, tell me a bit about yourself and just where you're working and what's been happening.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for having me. It's great to be on the podcast. I am an avid listener, so it's great to be actually on the other side. So I'm Babur, like Chris said. I am a GP, of course. I am also an IMG from Pakistan originally. I'm your definition of a portfolio GP. So I'm an urgent care out-of-hours GP with the NHS. I'm a medical officer with the British Army, and I'm the current chair for the college's South East Scotland faculty. In addition, I'm the associate director for medical education at NHS Tayside. And that role primarily involves looking after IMGs. And another, I suppose, IMG-related role is I'm a GMC associate. So I'm a CLAB examiner, which is the exam us IMGs have to sit, which I'll talk about, I'm sure, at some point. So there we go. That's me. That's me in a nutshell.
Well, that's quite a lot of hats. Like many GPs, you wear many hats, as well as being a dad and all these different types of things. Absolutely. So what I'd ask you about, Babar, is really to tell me your story and maybe, you know, some of the barriers and things that happened with you.
You've put me on the spot now.
Yeah.
I suppose we go back 15 years ago when a young, enthusiastic 23-year-old landed on the Scottish shores thinking he spoke immaculate English, and then he bumped into the Scottish accent. And I think that's... that's where it all kicked off for me. But I suppose if I kind of bracket it into things, there was the personal challenges, which was relocating and starting from scratch. And it is difficult. It is really, really difficult to start from scratch. What is worse is that you're actually rebuilding your entire identity. So I had 23 years of identity. I was Babur, who grew up on the same street, who knew neighbors, who had classmates, who had this entire social circle around me. And then suddenly I was just another IMG. And I suppose that's where it gives you an idea of what it's like, really. And then there's the incredible overarching loneliness and the unthinkable homesickness that comes with it. You miss your neighborhood cafe, and you miss the cat, the stray cat that walks down your street every evening. It's just completely bonkers, and it blew my mind. So that's the kind of personal toll of it, really. But then there's the social aspects I alluded to, and I suppose you have to build from scratch. It's like going into a new classroom. You're making new friends, and you're trying to be nice and approachable. And then there's language, and then there's accents, and there's dialects, and then there's phrases, and there's cultural oddities. And I mean, yeah, tea is dinner. I mean, what is that about? And things like amazing gems that you'd never ever had before, like iron brew. And then you suddenly think, oh my God, what had I been missing out on for the past 23 years of my life? So there's all of that. And then there's the professional challenges, because as an IMG, I come here as a doctor, really. And that is, I suppose, the most daunting one. So while you're trying to grapple with all these personal issues that you're trying to ignore because you're here to be a good doctor. And that's what kind of hits in. So there's the training side of things. There's understanding the training systems. There's understanding all these bodies that work with us, like the GMC, the BMA, the defense unions, the Royal Colleges, getting your head around all of that, and then understanding the professional norms and the work ethic side of things. And then finally, last but not the least, your life is built on finances. Let's accept it. And I one extremely bored afternoon sat down and did the maths. And I calculated, and I kid you not, that I'd spent about 10.5 grand, and that's pounds, in the whole process of reallocation. Right. So yeah, there you go. That's kind of been the journey.
That's quite a journey. I mean, I can just reflect on my own journey going from the south of Scotland to Aberdeen. I couldn't understand the accent at first, and I learned new words like a bosey is a cuddle and things like that, which, yeah. So it's, you know, a massive learning curve, I can imagine, going from one culture to another and then practicing. How have things improved, do you think, since you first? Have things got a bit better?
Oh, I'm an optimist, and I'm an optimist, and I've got evidence to back it up. Things are better. I'm now in that phase of my life where I say, back in my day, things weren't like this. And you know what? It is all, I suppose, a huge asset to what the NHS is trying to do, what the college is trying to do, what the BMA is trying to do, what all these organizations, the GMC is trying to do. So for starters, every health board in the country now puts up an enhanced induction, which is on top of your usual induction that you get when you join the NHS, and all IMGs get a structured enhanced induction. Now, that is a huge step forward, because that basically means we recognize that standard induction is just not good enough. And that's where we start talking to these IMGs literally from the day they set foot in the NHS as to what we can do to help them. Talk to them about things with standard inductions don't talk about, such as phrases, such as the million abbreviations that we use in the system, yeah, such as the charge nurse wears the dark navy, such as what is the advanced nurse practitioner, such as what is SAS, Scottish Ambulance Service. All of these things we tease out. So that's a huge, huge plus. And on top of that, the one thing I think is probably something that we don't celebrate enough is what we call the softer landing package. And this has been rolled out over the past, couple of years now, and it's slowly gathering traction. So the softer landing, safer care plan comes from the Scottish Region's IMG Support Network Group. They're called the SYNC Group. And all health boards in Scotland are now signatory to it. And basically, the softer landing program sets out exact parameters of what new starts IMGs should do and should not do. So, for example, they should not be put on out-of-hours on-call rota within the first 4 weeks. Now, that's common sense. That's the safe thing to do. That's the nice thing to do. And that's what we want for our colleagues and our patients. So things like that have made a difference. And then the social contacts you've just talked about. I mean, thank God for social media. We bash it, but things like WhatsApp is amazing. Things like Facebook groups are amazing. Things like social events now that the college regularly hosts, where we get people to come together and talk amongst peers. NES has an amazing IMG buddy scheme where you're buddied with another IMG who's come into the country ahead of you. And I've lost count of how many IMGs I've buddied since I've joined that scheme as a voluntary member. So those things are huge pluses. However, I'm sure you were expecting that.
Yeah.
There are still loads of other issues that I suppose we can talk about that we still need to work on.
So tell me, what are those issues? Just carry on, Baba.
So the one thing that broke my heart, and I say that it sounds dramatic, but it did, Chris, it did. The BMA Scotland Race Equality in Medicine Survey, the results of it came out in the past month, where 64% of all non-white doctors reported they had experienced or witnessed incidents of racism.
Yeah, I saw
mean, 64%.
Yeah. That's really, really sad.
And that is 2% up from 2021. Yeah. So, and you know what is the worst bit of it? We all kind of stop at that. The worst bit is that only 11% of these get reported because they feel so disempowered that they feel there's no point in raising that. And I think what again breaks my heart is that Scotland is genuinely, I mean, I call it my country. I call myself a Scot now. And it is the friendliest country I've genuinely been to. Lovely people, welcoming, friendly, nice. And I think it's telling that when we see those kind of figures, I think if the wider public knows, they would be absolutely devastated that this is what their healthcare professionals are experiencing. And the country would genuinely be in an uproar because this is not what Scotland is. And I think that's the bit that really gets to me. So I think that bit we really need to improve on. So that's the first one. The second one is differential attainment. And that is when we come to our training schemes. And that's another huge, huge gaping hole. And the one thing that we talk about is exams, and absolutely IMGs need more support for exams. But the other thing that we kind of tend to ignore or not talk about so much is portfolios and the fact that all the other non-exam assessments that come as a part of all training schemes, not just general practice, they're very, very foreign to IMGs. The whole concept of reflection, and I teach at Dundee and St Andrews and at ScotGem, and I can vouch for the fact that Scottish medical students are very well versed in the art of reflection because we teach them it from the very first day when they come into med school with us. But I can also vouch for the fact that it's a completely different concept for IMGs. And that's where they struggle because your portfolios, as you and me know, are an integral part of your training journey, really. And the psychological load of that is pretty intense. And the other thing that I've started kind of realizing myself now is the one thing that we don't talk about is neurodiversity in IMGs. And it's fascinating because we've all been concentrating on all these other things and we've kind of forgotten. And I'm guilty myself that, you know, IMGs, when they come around, we expect them to perform at the highest level, not recognizing that there's a lot of neurodiverse IMGs and the fact that there is a huge stigma associated with neurodiversity in a lot of cultures that they come from. So that is certainly something we need to look at better. And then I think goes without saying, a genuine, truly zero tolerance policy to racism and microaggressions is where things matter. You know, we talk about the Maslow's hierarchy. Your training will be good if you live a good life, if you get an apartment, if you manage to buy a car, if you actually are not worrying about your visa and looking over your shoulder every 6 months. That needs to be addressed. And the minute we do that, people will start concentrating on their training. They'll start concentrating on these exams. They'll start concentrating on being better doctors and better GPs. So I think that's what we need to do.
We actually in the college do a lot of work around joining up work from other arenas like the GMC, the MDDUS. We're actually trying to work together. But I did see that BMA report that you mentioned about, again, they were talking about the lack of quality of induction and getting jobs in this country. So it just shows that we've got to keep working on this.
And I think the fact that we're talking about this, Chris, is testimony to the fact that we are actually now recognizing the importance of it. I mean, I take immense pride in the fact that the college now actively has an IMG lead in each faculty. I mean, when we were talking about what is different, that is different, and that is important. The fact that the chair of the college in Scotland talks about this and takes active interest in it, and the fact that the chair of a faculty of the Scottish College is an IMG himself, that is important. And representation matters. It's really important for people to recognize that there are mentors and role models who've been through the same journey, and that you will emerge at the other end smiling. And I think we can all do that, because what I always say to everyone is that whether you like it or you don't, you would have worked alongside an IMG in your life if you're a GP. And likewise, if you are a Scottish resident, part of the Scottish public, whether you like it or you don't, you would have been treated by an IMG at some point in your life. And that is the fact that we need to accept. And if we embrace that, then let's make life better for them.
Absolutely. And the visa issue is really important. And we've seen the kind of research and talk to people about, you know, people feel really discouraged by the fact you've done all this training, you've gone through this process, and then they're making you jump through hoops to stay in the country. It's really frustrating. We've made representations to the UK government and also the Scottish government, and also trying to make visas easier to actually obtain. Explain the process, because we've done this as a practice from
So to listeners who are not kind of used to or do not understand the nitty-gritties of it, really. So to work in Scotland or in the UK, you have to have a sponsorship if you're not a British national, and that sponsorship has to come from your employer. Now, the employer has to have a certificate, which is a whole load of red tape, of course, to get. And once you get that certificate of sponsorship, you can then start employing someone who's not a British national. Now, the challenge for our IMG GP trainees and registrars is the fact that once they complete their training, while they're in their training, they are already on a certificate of sponsorship. But the minute they end their training, they're cut loose into the big bad world. And it's traumatic enough to complete your training and suddenly realize, I have completed my training and now I'm a grown-up GP. But on top of it, you're also now struggling to find a sponsor, because that's the only way you can stay in this country. And what is quite stark is the fact that these amazing professionals that we have trained up, if we do not get them jobs and sponsorships, they have no option but to go back to their country when we are screaming for more GPs within Scotland. And I think that's the bit that we need to understand and realize. Now, there's the logistical challenges, and then there's the financial challenges, because when you apply for a visa, you don't just apply for a visa for yourself. You have to pay the fee for your loved ones as well to stay in the country. So that's a huge, huge, huge financial shock to the system for someone who's just a brand new qualified GP. So that is obviously quite traumatic and stressful. Even more so if you've got kids who are in secondary school coming up to university. What do you do after spending all these years in the country? Do you then just leave it all and go away? So, you've touched upon something that's really important, and I appreciate that the college has done a lot of representation around it, and I think that is the way forward. So in my head, Chris, what I think is important is, and this is me wishfully thinking, I mean, in the ideal world, every GP trainee on completion of their GP training, if they complete the requirements that are needed, should be given what we call indefinite leave to remain. Now that is out with your and my gift, unfortunately, and that is something that lies with the Home Office. But failing that, and if that doesn't happen, I think the simplest solution that we've talked about in the college, certainly previously, is the fact that there should be a national sponsor that yep. takes on the sponsor's role. So our practices are struggling. Our practices have loads of admin already. They've got loads of costs already. It is unfair for us to expect for an individual practice in Peterhead or in any random village in Fife to grapple with the whole concept of sponsorship. There should be a national sponsorship forum where all GPs that need a sponsorship are sponsored for a visa to stay on in the country. And then we should go a step further. We should have a national matching recruitment service where basically we find out an area of need, there's a sponsorship ready, and we match the GP who's ready to go there. And that is the solution to it. Now, I've spoken to loads of IMGs in our faculty, and in fact, we talked about this at our faculty board meeting last week. What is interesting about IMGs is the fact that they are happy to move across Scotland. So they don't have familial ties or roots. So for example, I live in Dunfermline and I don't have extended family here. So if I see CT here and I get a job in Bonnie Dundee, I have no issues going across there while Dundee is struggling to recruit because there's no one there. So I think IMGs offer us this glimmer of opportunity and hope because these are doctors and GPs who are happy to cover a huge, large area of Scotland. And that's ideal and perfect for Scotland.
We also work with NHS Education Scotland and trainers to see how we can help with any trainee who needs additional help with the exam. And we're talking to them this morning about these types of things going forward, because naturally registrars are concerned about the exam. And we need to give them extra support.
I think
whatever the reason.
That's really important, Chris, because remember, the journey helps you decide on your destination, right? So if you have an excellent training journey in Scotland, you will choose to stay in Scotland. And what is also really important is kind of the unsung heroes of general practice, which is the army of trainers that we have that are training year upon year these amazing world-class GPs. And the fact that we are now sitting up and giving our trainers support, whether that is with college or through NES, that's really important because if we equip our trainers with the right tools, they can look after these IMGs better. And if they do that, then that would mean that the IMGs will obviously thrive. I always credit, I don't know if my trainer will be listening to this or not, but I always credit him with being my spiritual father. And the fact that this random GP from the west of Scotland made such an impact on my life just because he looked after me, just because he would sit down with me and say, "What's happening? I hear there's been a bomb blast in Pakistan. Is everything okay back home?" That made a difference to me, Chris. And that is the reason why he was the first one to text me when I had my wee boy. And that's the reason why he was there at my wedding. And that's the reason why I still text him whenever Pakistan loses a cricket match. I think it's important developing those relationships.
No, that's right. I mean, I still know my trainer very well. It's kind of like an apprenticeship. It's a relationship. You learn, you role model, and that's a really important part of it. And we need to support trainers to be able to do that as well. And
absolutely
going forward. I mean, NES would want me to say this, and I'm proud to say that actually for experience of training in general practice, Scotland comes out top. It comes out when they actually do the surveys, it comes out top for experience of training.
The GMC workforce report, Chris, and it's fascinating. So it looks at the number of doctors in the first year of GP training in 2023. And surprise, surprise, the largest group was non-UK female doctors. And then when you look overall across the UK, there's about 550 more IMG GP trainees that came into the system in 2023. So the college recognizes that, and I think the NHS recognizes that, that general practice is the destination of choice for a lot of IMGs, and they are a huge, massive population. And I think that is something that we need to keep in mind when we are obviously deciding our next steps.
Yeah, I think it's something that is in our mind going forward. When we're talking to different organisations of the government, it's in our mind. When we're writing policy papers or reading policy papers, it's in our mind. So we'll continue to work, realising that we need to still, there's a bit to go.
There always is, but I agree, and I couldn't commend the college more. And I say that because I've had the joy of being a part of the college, and I recognize that a lot of it, often from the outside, you think that this is just empty words, but it isn't. And I think that fills me with so much confidence and hope. And that alone trickles down to the trainees, and that does make a difference. The fact that, you know, they know that that is what is being talked about positively within the college, I think that is really important. So thank you to the college, and I hope we continue to work on this.
Great. Well, that's a really good point to end on, Babar. Thanks again.
Not a problem.
Great to talk to you, and always learn something as well. Thanks for joining us on the podcast. Take care. Thank you
for having me, and I hope to have many more interesting conversations with you, Chris, and thank you for all that you do for the college.
No worries. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the second episode of Generally Speaking, the RCGP Scotland podcast. Be sure to follow us on social media to stay up to date with all of the work and news from across the college.